Welcome to the Ask for Football Army Football Show. The Army Football Show is an insider's guide for cadets, old grads, and college football fans to follow the Army team throughout their season as they seek to beat Navy and claim the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. Ask for Football is brought to you by our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. Whether you're buying, selling, or just exploring your options, Jocelyn Bradley is the expert you can trust to navigate the real estate market with ease. Visit jocelynbradley.com to learn more. And let's get started at the Ask for Football Army Football Show.
All right, Army fans, we are going to spend the As for Football program talking about As for Lacs. Very special episode. We have a Big Three lacrosse bracketologist on with us today. Very excited. Let's get into it. Patriot League regular season play is done. Army won their first outright title since 2010, securing the one seed and home field advantage. Boston is the two seed. Lafayette is the three seed. We have the number four seed is, Lafayette, then Lehigh, then Colgate, and then Navy. So Navy's playing at Lafayette on Tuesday, and then Colgate is going to play at Lehigh on Tuesday. Depending on the winners of those games, Army will get the highest remaining seed or lowest remaining. I always have a problem with the verbiage. The worst seed remaining is going to play Army, and the best seed remaining is going to play Boston. So effectively what that means is if Navy beats Lafayette, Army is going to play Navy. Otherwise, they're going to play the winner of Colgate and Lehigh. That'll be on Friday. Semifinals are Friday at Mikey Stadium. The whole semifinals and finals, the final four is all at Mikey. And then the finals are to follow on Sunday. I think 4 o'clock is Army's semifinal. Boston's is at 7, and then it's 11:30 a.m. on Sunday, May 4th, CBS Sports Network. Is the final. So let's start to get into this. Before we do, Dan, you want to take us through our commercial?
I would love to take us through this commercial. If you have watched this show before, or even if you haven't, now is the time for you to learn that we have a sponsor here at As for Football, and it's Jocelyn Bradley. She is a realtor in the Fort Bragg area. She is a veteran who spent her Army career in logistics, where she discovered her passion for making a difference in people's lives. She has sold something like 500 houses in her short career as a realtor, which just tells you how awesome she is. And she is committed to helping her clients find their dream homes when they're in the area. And she helps. She just gives you exceptional service when she's working for you. Jocelyn has decided to support us here at As for Football, and that's how we stay in business. And she's the right person to help you get into your dreams, even if you're not moving to the Fort Bragg, Fort Liberty. I don't even know what the name of that place is now. Area. Give Jocelyn a call. She has an extended network of veteran realtors, both realtors with experience and realtors that used to be in the Army, who can support you if you're looking to move somewhere in the country. As you know, the real estate market is chaotic. Now, especially it's chaotic with interest rates going all over the place. You want somebody who's going to be on your side. That's what we're trying to help you with. So go to astrofootball.com, find her little business card, click on it, get in touch with Jocelyn, and she will either help you herself if you're moving to Bragg, or she will help you find somebody that you can trust that's going to show you what you want wherever it is that you're moving. And that is it. Go ahead, James.
Thanks, Dan. All right, let's get into it. So we're trying to answer effectively two questions today. The first is, you know, Army's nationally ranked. Where do they stand going in to Selection Sunday, this upcoming Sunday? They're ranked number 4 right now in the polls, 4 or 5, depending on the poll. But what does that translate in terms of the committee and how that's going to look? The second question that we're going to cover, the second topic, is what does this sort of mean in the grand scheme of non-revenue generating sports, Olympic sports, as they call it, at service academies, Army in particular. So for the first one, we're going to have a little bit of a bracketology talk. We've brought in a special guest, Mark, from at Fieldy Sticks. Excuse me, at Fieldy Stick, if you want to find him on X. Mark, pleasure to have you. I don't think people know this, but This is what, season three or four of us going back like four times a week on Twitter.
Yeah. We have a lot of behind the scenes chat about Army and where they stand. So definitely not our first time talking.
And not just Army. I mean,
the national
college
picture,
sports, yeah. National picture, everything. I mean, I'll have you know, X has started to auto delete our conversation because when I go back to look for stuff, it's no longer there.
Yeah. I guess that's an honor that it's been running for that long.
Yeah. So very excited to bring Mark on, talk a little Army lacrosse in this situation. This is sort of I'd say probably the best at-large case that Army has had in a very long time. If you just put 2021 aside, because it was the weird scheduling COVID year, the Ivy League didn't exist, the whole nine, right? So if you take 2021 out of it, this is on a normal year, a very interesting year for Army, and it kind of comes at the pinnacle of all these changes to college sports and sort of a new dynamic in college lacrosse and non-revenue generating sports. So it's a conversation I'm very excited to have. There's been a lot of going back and forth on X, on social media, about this and that. I want everyone to take a deep breath, and I want you to throw out what you think it should be. We're going to talk about where Army stands, based on the criteria that the committee will decide on this year. We'll get into the rest of it, but what I've seen happen is that lacrosse media, and I'm including Mark in this, what I've seen happen is that lacrosse media will make a positive statement about something like, this is the case, here's how it is going to be. And then Army fans, and I'm not picking on Army fans here, this happens every time a mid-major gets left out of some tournament, they will take that as a normative claim of, well, they're saying that it should be like this. Well, the problem with the normative claim is a problem with the NCAA, not with the media, right? The media is covering the sport. The NCAA sets the damn rules. The media is just covering what the rules are, right? You wouldn't get pissed at the media if the referees called something the wrong way. Don't get pissed at the media because the rules are set up a certain way. If you have a problem with it, it's an RPI problem. The second thing that I'll sort of frame this discussion with is, if you have a problem with RPI, you're not alone. Lots of people do, but you can't just say RPI sucks and not offer a solution. There needs to be a better way of doing it. And before you jump in and just say, get the metrics out of it, I would highly advise against letting a group of people that are overrepresented by big three conferences decide who the field is with no metrics. So you have to have a set of metrics.
Before we move on to the actual criteria, mm-hmm. I would like to say that I am happy to have that conversation about, should we be doing this differently? But I think that conversation needs to come after the season.
Sure.
Not right now.
Yes. I agree with that. Because at the end of the day, the only way that you can evaluate should this be done differently is to look at the decisions that have actually been made. And despite, you know, other Army fans that I would disagree with saying that Army should have made it in previous years, 2021 aside, I don't think you can make a case for that by any metric, unless you're just, you know, pulling stuff out of a hat, then Army should have made it. If you're going to have a metrics-based argument, this is the year where it really matters for Army. So we'll visit this again on Selection Sunday night, and we'll have that conversation then. But there's a lot of lacrosse to play between now and then. So let's look into the actual criteria that the committee is going to use this year. First and foremost, right, automatic qualifiers, they get in. Full stop, right? You win your conference, you win your eligible conference, not the League of Independence that calls themselves the ACC. You win your qualified league, you get an automatic qualifier. Then of everybody else, they're going to pick eight, right? They're going to pick eight at-larges to join the field. Those eight at-larges have to have a 500 record or better and have played at least 10 games against Division I opponents, and they have to be an eligible team. So transition teams like Lemoyne and Mercyhurst, not eligible. Okay, We have our field of eligible at-large teams. Let's talk about what they're going to use to select those eight out of all of the eligible at-large teams. Eligibility and availability of student athletes for the NCAA championship. One loss record. Strength of schedule, which is defined as the average RPI of your top 10 opponents. Results of the RPI, so your actual RPI ranking. Your record against RPI, we call these buckets. So your record against teams ranked 1 to 5, 6 to 10, 11 to 15, 16 to 20, and 21 plus. So you sort of have five buckets, and we'll get more into that in a bit. You have your average RPI win and average RPI loss, which are sort of in practicality secondary metrics. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mark. Give me a little bit of leash.
I would say that that basically the two that matter are the wins against the RPI buckets and a team's own RPI. Those are by far the two most important.
The two most important. Strength of schedule, average RPI win, average RPI loss. Those are secondary metrics. Also, and we'll get more into this, a secondary metric, head-to-head. Results versus common opponents, significant wins and losses. So wins against teams higher in the RPI, losses versus teams lower in the RPI, location of contest. So they're allowed to consider home and away. And then they don't call it the look or the feel or anything like that. They call it input from the regional advisory committee. So you have your selection committee, and then each region of lacrosse has its own advisory committee that can provide input to the committee. Generally, those things, they don't rely upon those things. I can think of one famous example when they needed the ACC to decide. The three top teams in the ACC all beat each other, and they needed to figure it out. And they basically went to the regional advisory committee to figure it out. But that's more of an at-request type thing. Okay, that's it. Then they take those and they seed the top eight teams. It doesn't matter if you're an at-large. Doesn't matter if you're an automatic qualifier. They're going to seed the top eight teams of the field. And then they're going to filter the 9 through 18 into the bracket. And the only considerations, the big consideration is flights. So they have to minimize the number of flights. They're not supposed to go above two, although they have to. And then they're supposed to keep the bracket as true as possible. So they'd like to keep 9 at 8. They'd like to keep 10 at 7, right? And they're only switching those if it has to work to prevent flights. So that's sort of how they field it, that's sort of how the criteria works. Mark, am I off on any of this?
I would say maybe one thing is that you have to decide the play-in games before you start messing with 9 through 18. Okay. Yeah.
Yes, and Army should not be in any question of a playoff game this year. So your number one seed and your number two seed are going to play the winner of two play-in games. And then everybody else goes straight to the first round games. Also important to note, if you get a seed, you get a home quarterfinal game before the predetermined neutral sites of you get a home first round game, before the predetermined sites of the quarterfinals and the final four. Cool. Give me a little bit of a leash, Mark, but generally how this works is they take RPI and they take your RPI and they kind of group the RPI into different sections based on your buckets of wins. So that 1 to 5, 6 to 10, wins and losses. Generally speaking, there's not too much care about losses inside the top 20. Maybe that can be a really particular, a differentiator. You know, okay, they have a loss to 1 to 5. You have a loss to 16 to 20.
Yeah. I'd say you're really having to find anything to differentiate between two teams if you're starting to look at losses.
Right. The only time losses really matter is if you have a 21-plus loss, right? A bad loss. Wins matter a lot more in the top 20. Mm-hmm. Outside of the top 20, wins, to be frank, don't matter. Right? A 21-plus win is not going to end up on a sheet in front of the selection committee. So you care about your 1-5, 6-10, 11-15, and 16-20 buckets. That's what matters, right?
That's it.
So you've taken your RPI. You say, okay, 1 through 4 are in sort of a group because they're 1 through 4 and their win buckets are kind of similar. 5 through 8 are in a group, and you kind of group all the way down. And then within those groups, you're looking at head to head, location to contests, maybe more individually the buckets, things like that. That's where you start to get into the nitty gritty.
So just to give a quick example on that, for tomorrow's bracket, the groups are basically going to be Maryland is clear number one, then 2 through 4 is a group, which is Cornell, Penn State, and Princeton in some order. Then you have basically 5 through 7, which is a group, which is North Carolina, Ohio State, and Notre Dame in some order. And then Duke is a pretty solid 8. And then Army is going to be in the 9 through 11 group, which is like Duke, Syracuse, and Harvard. Now, I know you said earlier that Army was number 4 in the polls, and I actually don't look much at the polls. Who are they behind? Is it the same clear top 3 as Cornell, Princeton, Maryland?
It is. Penn State's behind them.
So that would be the disconnect, is that Army's metrics and wins don't align with, I guess, the media and coaches' perception of how good this Army team is.
Right. And that's not to say that the metrics are right or the coaches are right or the media is right. It's just to say that the metrics are not aligned with them. And at the end of the day, what the coaches think and what the media think don't end up on the sheet in front of the selection committee, and the metrics do. So that's what we're trying to get across here, right? So for example, right, if I was looking at that group that you talked about, UNC, Notre Dame, and Ohio State, right? At that point, okay, I've created that group. Okay, well,
and there's an obvious order,
right? Ohio State beat Notre Dame. Notre Dame beat UNC. So the order is going to be Ohio State, Notre Dame, UNC, right? Yep. And that's real easy. But it's only then that head-to-head matters, right? I'm not, and I put this out earlier on X, I'm not looking at Ohio State and saying, well, Utah deserves to be one spot ahead of Ohio State because they beat Ohio State in Columbus, right? Of course not, right? Their RPI is way lower. And yes, you can justify some jumping in the RPI due to the head-to-head, but you sort of have to be in the same bucket, the same group, before you start using the head-to-head to jump, right?
Wait. Can I jump in and ask a question? Army behind Duke, and the reason is because Duke has better wins? Because yes. I'm looking at Duke's schedule, and they lost to Denver.
So for example, Duke currently has 6 top 20 wins and Army has 3.
And Army's might go away, by the way.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into.
Okay. Okay.
Like I agree. That doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel right, but it's what the data sheet says currently.
Right. This is a positive claim, not a normative one, right?
I asked a question and I got an answer. I don't have to like it. I learned that at West Point.
All right, cool. So let's get into our possibilities, and I'm going to have Mark help us kind of navigate the sort of ceiling and floor of each possibility, right? So possibility 1, Army wins their next 2 games. They're the Patriot League champion. They are, at that point, 14-1. They have somewhere between 2 and 4 top 20 wins, right? Their 2 top 20 wins will be UNC and Boston, most likely. If they don't face Boston, maybe they're between 1 and 4, but UNC and Boston. And then I'm making things up. Maybe Colgate beats Boston, gets into the top 20, and then stays there. There's a lot that can happen, right? But you have UNC as a lock as a top 20, hopefully a top 5. Boston is a maybe. And then currently 19th and 20th in RPI and very fragile are Rutgers and Yale. So that will form a lot of those win buckets, which with RPI is the 2 primary things the committee is looking at to group teams. Right. So, okay, Mark, they're 14-1, and what's their ceiling and what's their floor?
So I think that the committee is going to do everything they can to seed Army as high as they can. The problem is that if there's a profile that clearly looks better than Army, they have better wins, they have better metrics, how do you seed Army ahead of them? So if you start counting off the teams that look like they're probably going to project ahead of Army, you have Maryland, Princeton, Cornell, we're already at 3. Penn State is highly likely to project ahead of Army. There's 4. If Ohio State beats Rutgers, on Thursday, a game they're favored in. There's five. And then whoever wins the ACC tournament, because they all play each other, someone has to win those games. They're six. I would say Army projects is probably seventh or eighth in this case.
Right. Okay. And
that doesn't strike me as a crime. Like, I'm not going to be out, you know, in front of, you know, on Fifth Avenue in New York with a sign in my hand saying rank Army higher. I mean, eighth is a thing I think we could live with. I do personally.
Now here's the question. Here's the follow-on question. The committee, given its data, would not be extremely out of line to have Army at number seven Syracuse in one of these situations, even if they win the Patriot League. Can you explain why that might be?
Basically, Syracuse is going to have better metrics, and depending on how the ACC tournament goes, they might also have better wins. What's the case for Army? It's basically just record.
Let's say Syracuse loses in the semifinal of the ACC tournament. I don't know who they're playing, but let's say they lose. There is still, I think, a case to be made for Syracuse over Army based on the metrics.
If it's for the last spot, yes, I wouldn't say Syracuse is a seed in that case.
Okay. I mean, you're talking about, I only know of one head-to-head that they both played, and that's North Carolina.
Yeah.
Syracuse lost to North Carolina yesterday. I watched that game. James told me I was supposed to be rooting for the Cuse, but I rooted for the Tar Heels.
I would say that Syracuse has a lot of work to do to get a seat at this point. So that's not necessarily a likely destination for Army as a road destination.
Sure. Let's say they're at number seven, Harvard.
Yeah.
I mean, that's certainly within the realm of possibility. Harvard, you know, knocks off, I don't know who their semifinal opponent is, but Princeton or Cornell. They knock off Princeton or Cornell and then lose to the other one in the final. Mm-hmm. Harvard is a seven seed, very likely, and 14-1 Army could be playing at Harvard in a first round game.
Absolutely. Yeah. That, I mean, look, I think my gut feeling is that if Army wins the Patriot League championship, you're probably getting a low seed. But if eight teams put together clearly better profiles, I don't know what the selection committee can do, because they can't make a decision that's not backed by the data, because they have to defend it. Like, if I were making the decision personally, and then you put me on national TV to defend the decision, and my whole reasoning is I think Army's better, I'm opening myself up to a ton of criticism by making that decision.
I mean, Alabama says that every single year with three losses. So we've all heard that before.
Well, Alabama lost to Michigan in the whatever the hell bowl it was this year, ReliaQuest. But I guess the point I'm trying to illustrate is, let's say there are seven teams that are just clearly their resumes, their RPI is higher, their win buckets are higher. And then you have a group of three teams, Harvard, Syracuse, and Army, that are 8, 9, 10, right? Would it shock you to see Army at number 8 Harvard?
Absolutely not. I mean,
yeah, exactly. So I guess my point is, even if Army wins and there aren't eight teams that are clearly better than Army, they still could be unseeded away in the first round.
Can you repeat that, James? I was reading the comment on screen.
Oh, you're good. Even if Army wins the Patriot League and there aren't eight teams that are clearly resume metrics wise better than Army, they still might be on the road in the first round.
Yeah.
As a 14-1 team.
Army does not control their own destiny for a seed.
Right. Exactly. Okay.
It's just like when we get the second scenario, Army, the factors that are going to decide whether Army has a compelling at large case are not within Army's control.
Right. Right. Okay. So that's number one. And with scenario two, what you just said is true on multiple levels. Army or outcome number two, there's sort of 2A and 2B. 2A is they lose to Boston in the Patriot League finals. 2B is they lose to some other team in the Patriot League tournament. Can you take us through sort of number one, the differences between those two? And then number two, where Army would stand in that situation and what the different inputs are.
So I've seen this idea floating around from, I guess I'll say, other media members, that if Army makes it to the Patriot League championship league or Patriot League championship game and loses to BU, that they're a lock for an at-large. But if they lose in the semifinals, they're out. And I would say that's complete nonsense. That these two scenarios, 2A and 2B, actually look pretty similar. that the only difference is that if you stack the losses to BU, there's no way that Army has a bad loss. Whereas if the loss comes to someone else, it's possible that you do have a 21-plus bad loss, which makes Army's profile and at large case a bit weaker. So on where this stacks up, it's very clearly on the bubble. I would say how it evaluates depends on two main factors. One, whether Rutgers and Yale remain in the RPI top 20, and two, who you're ultimately being compared to on that final bubble call.
Right. Okay. So that's a big thing, right? And that's why I told Dan he should be rooting against Carolina last week, is because if Carolina had lost last week after losing to Notre Dame and had lost in a semifinal of the ACC tournament, you're now at a point where Army is being directly compared to UNC, and then head-to-head matters, right? But if UNC is in a group above Army, now it doesn't matter, right? And I think one thing...
But you're okay, so let's say UNC, with apologies, let's say UNC wins the ACC tournament, and it doesn't help you now that you've got to win against the ACC champion? I mean, that's... On its face, that sounds insane.
So that win would be worth no more than it currently is, because North Carolina's fifth in RPI, which is as high as you can get in terms of win buckets.
Okay. So I guess I know where I have diverged from lacrosse public opinion here, but I will.
Well, I'll step back. Like I said, I asked a question. Yeah. Well, let's be clear, Dan. Nobody here is making a normative claim about this, right? Like, nobody's saying that it's right that the buckets are what they are, right? So, I think Mark and I both think that it's arbitrary and kind of nonsensical.
Yeah,
it just is what it is.
I tend to not air my opinion on this too much, but
fair enough.
My biggest complaint with the current system is not necessarily that we're using the RPI, it's that we're bucketing wins in the way we are, because 1 = 5 doesn't make any sense.
Right, and 5, 1 = 5, but 5 > 6,
which equals 10.
Yeah, which equals 10. Yeah. Right, exactly. Okay, all right. Let's go back to the comments for a second. So Ryan asked, can we move to hockey model and make the data truly public? The committee is committee's relying this heavily on data. So we're gonna get into NPI a little bit. I want to touch on that. Go to Lax Reference on Twitter. I told Zach there that I'd plug him. We're going to get into MPI. I have some things to talk about there. It is public. RPI is extremely public. It's a simple. It is probably too simple of a formula, but it is a simple formula. 25% of it is your win loss record. 50% of it is your opponent's win loss record, and 25% of it is your opponent's win loss record.
So to illustrate just how simple it is, James and I were looking at a hypothetical of what Army's RPI would be if they were undefeated, and I'm pretty sure we were both doing that calculation by hand.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it involved nothing but arithmetic. I'll put it that way.
I can't believe I'm about to start arguing for the eye test.
Okay, we can get into this. So, like I said, right, we think, or I don't want to put words in Mark's mouth, but I think that people think there's a problem with the RPI in the sense that it values, at least the way that it's used, it values losses too little, I think is the big thing. It doesn't value wins enough. Fine. Everyone can have a problem with everything. What's your solution, right? Division III this year is trying out something that involves no committee. It is simply a formula, and that's it. It's called the NPI. It's 25-75 instead of 25-50-25. The 25 is your win-loss record, and then your 75 is strength of schedule. That's what they call it. But it's much more closely related to a strength of record, something that approximates how an average team would do against your opponents. And it doesn't allow losses to help you, which RPI certainly does. And it only accounts for your 7 best wins, which, while arbitrary, doesn't punish Army for playing Mercer, right? Or having to play Holy Cross in their conference. So that's important. I do think that there is something to the fact that the Power Three conferences can schedule as they like, and they will schedule in a way that will help them when the NPI come, you know, if the NPI were to come around, as they do now with the RPI, and as they should. But at least the formula, I think, is more of a just formula. It's something that values wins. It provides bonuses for what they call quality wins. So for Army, that would be things like if they were to beat Boston, Rutgers, UNC. I think Yale would have even counted this year. And David mentions nothing about regarding scores. A one-goal game is different than being ahead by so much. No, the NCAA by rule has always disallowed score differential in its metrics. In fact, if you think back to the BCS in football, all of these computer metrics, which accounted for 1/3 of the BCS standings, were specifically prohibited from using score differential in their metrics. And many of them, including Sagarin, one of the most famous, would publish its actuals and then it's BCSs because they were so different because they weren't allowed to use score differential. Conferences can use them in tiebreakers, but the NCAA by practice never does.
One presumes that's to keep Army from running up the score on Mercer. Correct. 77. Okay.
So one other thing I want to say that is not considered is timing of games. And that is possibly going to be relevant in one of your bubble comparisons, which is against Syracuse. That if Syracuse is on the bubble, they've lost four in a row, but the committee isn't supposed to consider that.
Right. Just like when Notre Dame won six in a row in 2022, they got left out because there were teams in a group and head-to-heads mattered, right? Okay. So, and so did win buckets. So there's that. Now, I will say there is something in NPI. It's not being practiced in D3 this year. However, the function exists in the formula if they wish to use it for a differential between overtime games and non-overtime games, or overtime wins and losses versus non-over. That I'm okay with because nobody's trying to win in overtime versus trying to win by one goal. And like in football, like I don't care if you win by 8 in overtime, or in basketball, I don't care if you win by 20 in overtime. Winning by 20 in overtime is effectively a 0.5 point win in my book, right? I'd rather win by one in regulation.
I'm going to make a quick aside here, but college football overtime drives me insane. I would rather them just add one onto the winning score than have these insane scores.
Right. Exactly. Right.
It makes the betting crazy too. Yeah. That's a fair point. I thought they had it perfect before they changed it, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. I think in an overtime in hockey, right? You could win a shootout, you know, 3-0. The score, they add one to your score, right? Yep. So that I'm actually okay with, but yes, it's to prevent the running up of scores. So Army loses a game. What are the things? Can you talk a little bit about the cut line, Mark, at the 2021?
So for those of us, quote, in the know, the last weekend of the season, probably the most important thing to watch is the RPI 2021 cut line, because anything 20 and above counts as a quality win for these teams, and anything below is just another game. So beating Yale and Rutgers, those look like quality wins for Army right now. There's a possibility they look just like beating Mercer at then, because they're in the 21-76 bucket, which is nothing, basically. So there's this scenario out there where some of these mid-major teams that are currently sitting in the high 20s in RPI, like Towson and Georgetown, win their AQ and displace two of your quality wins from the RPI top 20, in which case Army has North Carolina and maybe another win against someone else. I don't know. BU, Colgate's, who?
Right. There is a situation where Army loses to BU and they have one top 20 win, and that top 20 win is against RPI number 9, and they're not even competitive compared to Richmond at that point, I don't think.
I honestly don't know if they would be competitive compared to Michigan for the first team out.
Right. Yeah. I think I think the big lesson here before we move on to the second question here, the big lesson here is that even though one loss record is the first thing listed on the selection criteria, it's the last thing that's considered. All right. It's RPI and RPI buckets. And then from there, it's head to head and location of contests, you know, maybe some other marginal things. Ryan comments, I don't remember this having as many issues with this before the ACC lost its AQ when Maryland went to the Big Ten and John Hopkins went to the Big Ten. We're going to talk about the greater picture over not just men's lacrosse, but all of Army sports here soon, because I do want to bring that up. But in terms of solving problems, we have a guy named Craig Oxane, and Dan's going to tell you about how he can solve your problems.
Oh, you got me writing you a note in the back office there. Friends, this show is sponsored by Craig Oxane, and he is the area sales manager and mortgage broker at the Money Store. As you know, I hope, Craig is a member of the West Point class of 1994, licensed to lend in all 50 states. He is one of the most successful VA lenders in the entire country. He's going to offer you super competitive rates, do the best he can to give you the best deal that he possibly can. And as we discussed, like buying a house, going through a mortgage, doing all this stuff is super confusing. Like, this is not an easy process. Rates move all over the place. You're trying to decide when to lock in. It is not the time to deal with somebody who just wants to make a buck off you. You want to deal with somebody who actually cares. You can call on the phone, who's not some random call center, some big box bank, mindless website, AI from China, who knows what. That's not what you want. Right. And friends, as we said, this is how the West Point network functions. Craig is helping us stay in business here at Astro Football. We're trying to help you get the best deal on a mortgage that we can by introducing you to the man that you need to meet. And as we've said many times, Craig does not charge lending fees for veterans. It's a huge savings, like $1,300. $1,300. Get that money. So let me ask you, Fieldy Stick, I'm sorry, I don't remember what your first name was.
Mark,
have you bought a house before?
I have not. I built my own house, so I have never purchased one on the market.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Does it seem like an easy process from the outside?
It does not. I have dealt with that on the seller side, and it is a very difficult process that you want someone knowledgeable to walk you through it.
It's a nightmare. So anyway, Craig's link is on our website. He's got a little business card there. Click on it. Answer a couple questions. Be talking to him in a little while. I'm telling you, save yourself some time and heartache. Go with somebody you can trust. James, thank you.
Hey, before we get to the question number two, Dan, I know you got a couple of questions. Are there any that are more relevant to the first question rather than the second?
I guess we can stay a little bit more on lacrosse before we sort of start talking about some of this other stuff. So when I watch lacrosse, and I am a complete outsider. I am a college swimmer, right? I'm a college swimmer who writes about football because I enjoy sports, right? And I watch lacrosse, and it seems to me like the expectation is that you grew up with a lacrosse stick in your hand. And when they say, you know, so-and-so is going to do this and that, and you're just supposed to know what they're talking about. Like, how do you feel about that? Do you want lacrosse to be a spectator sport? Are we looking for casual fans of lacrosse?
So I grew up in Georgia.
Okay,
I'm also a complete outsider in a way. I got into lacrosse by watching it on TV about 15 or 20 years ago. It took me probably a decade to really pick up everything to the level that I'm on now, I'd say. Do I want this to be a big spectator sport? I'm very conflicted about that. I would love to see more schools add lacrosse. I would love to see it become more national.
Okay.
What I don't want it to see is it become college football, college basketball.
Yeah. So we were talking about this, and James called lacrosse a non-revenue sport. And before we even start with this, I sort of wanted to argue with the premise. We had 3,000 people at Army's game against Boston University, 5,000 the next week against North Carolina. They probably had about 9,000-10,000 people at the Army-Navy game down in Annapolis. Like, that does not necessarily strike me as a non-revenue sport. I mean, how do you, is that a fair assessment? Is this a non-revenue sport?
So the one game that I went to this year was at Georgia Tech, where I went to school. I went to Maryland versus Notre Dame, and there were about 10,000 people there.
Yeah.
Okay. I would say that it is a revenue sport at a very small subset of schools. Talking Army, Syracuse, Hopkins, Virginia, Maryland, like the traditional powers, Loyola.
Sure. I don't know if Army's a traditional power. I think more of an emerging power, but okay.
You are a very historic power if we want to go way back in the day. I would say that small subset.
We got like what, 8 Wingate trophies? I mean, come on now.
And beyond that, I would say it's a non-revenue sport still.
Okay. So Michigan has lacrosse now. Ohio State has lacrosse. Clemson recently started a team, yeah?
They started a women's team.
Women's team. Okay. So, like, are you concerned that Texas will start a lacrosse team? And, I mean, you know, they'll put out 20 Olympians in a year in non-revenue sports.
So I don't know what the rating of this podcast is, so I'll keep my language PG-13. It scares crap out of me.
Okay. Okay. It seems to me like they've built a system that really favors the good old boys. And I don't like football does the same thing. I'm not defending anybody, but it strikes me that if you're Syracuse or the ACC in general, you want a system that is fair, because if Michigan and Ohio State and Clemson get serious about spending on the sport, you're in a little trouble maybe.
So to give my personal perspective on that, because I'm a Johns Hopkins fan, okay. I wonder very much what Hopkins' future in the Big Ten looks like.
Okay. So,
I mean, you're competing against a bunch of schools that play FBS football.
Yeah.
And you're a tiny private school.
Yeah. I'll leave it alone. But I just as we've been talking about this, it strikes me that you want to leave if you're the powers of lacrosse right now, you want to leave something for quality play from underdogs, because that could be you very soon.
Dan,
not Notre Dame, but like the rest of us.
Can I push back on that for just a second?
Sure.
What do you think is unfair about the current system? Because I hear you. I just wanted to hear, like, from what perspective is it? Because it feels wrong to me too. But the data is the data. That's the.
I guess what I would say is that if you're an up and coming school, you're a smaller school. Let's say you're Denver, right? You're going to have a hard time making your case. Maybe it's not technically impossible, but I think we've shown it's difficult. On this show, I mean, Army had they scheduled Rutgers and Yale and North Carolina, and through no fault of their own, the traditional powers that they put on their schedule maybe didn't perform to standard, except North Carolina. I mean, what else can they do?
Here's the way to I think the best way to describe the unjust situation here, right?
Yeah, I just justice is maybe not the right word.
Here's the way to describe it, right? If you put Army in the Ivy League year in and year out, they are making the tournament way more than they do, even if they're picking up extra losses. It is teams in mid-major conferences that are in those mid-major conferences because the Big Three would never let them in, that because they have the schedule, the conference schedule that they have, will never be able to perform. And I don't mean perform as in terms of recruit, win games, so on and so forth, but we'll never be able to perform in the metrics the way that teams who recruit the same and recruit and play the same or worse than them perform in the metrics just because of the conference that they're in. That's to me what seems unfair about it.
So the season is won halfway when the schedules come out, that I can spend a few weeks looking at the schedules and tell you what teams have a chance of an at-large bid when the schedules start trickling out in December.
Yeah. We see the same thing in football, right? Army went, you know, had an exceptional season, absent one loss, one inexplicable loss, but, you know, won their conference, did almost everything they could do, and never really had a realistic shot at the college football playoff just because of the way the schedule itself was structured. I don't know that it would have benefited us, but I mean, just looking at the way things were stacked, it was incredibly difficult path. This is, you know what I'm saying?
So let me talk about some systemic stuff real quick. The issue that I have with the FBS playoff is that it doesn't follow NCAA rules. that you should have 9 AQs. It should look just like lacrosse. It should be a playoff. That lacrosse has AQs is a good thing. It lets these smaller conferences have access. Yep. The system that we currently use to seed and select at larges is basically a subjective interpretation of objective data. If it was straight objective data, Army probably doesn't get in at large this year. The metrics aren't there. I think that this is probably more fair to Army than the alternative, is my opinion.
Interesting. Okay. All right, James, I'm done here.
Yeah, sweet. I mean, that's a good conversation. It's like what is unfair about it? And then once we determine what's unfair about it, okay, what is the formula? And I really do think I'm coming around. I used to not like MPI because I thought the problem was just simply power imbalance, which is still a problem. But I'm coming around on MPI because it values a lot of the right things. And it also punishes a lot of the right things. So losses can't help you. I get 7 is arbitrary, but it doesn't punish you for a win against Mercer like Army this year, right? Anyway, let's move on to the greater conversation, right? Army is in this weird spot now where, you know, going forward, Michigan and Ohio State, are they spending some money on lacrosse? Sure. If they have lots of extra dollars to spend on men's sports, that money at Ohio State is going to fund their $20 million football program so they can win national championships, right? Army's in this weird spot where they can offer something that's not monetary, similar to an Ivy League, where they can get competitive rosters on the national stage in the non-revenue generating sports. The problem is that that Army and Navy are like that. The rest of the Patriot League is not, right? Lafayette had probably had the best year Lafayette has ever had, at least in the NCAA era. And they, best guess, 3 of their players are going to be on Ivy League rosters next year because you'd rather have a degree from Dartmouth than from Lafayette. Right. So year in and year out, Army's not going to have those number 2 and number 3 teams in the Patriot League that are ranked, you know, 13th and 17th in the RPI like the Ivy League will. So the conversation becomes, OK, how does Army put themselves in a situation where they're competitive on the national stage when maybe their conference mates are not?
I don't know what the answer to that one is, because James and I have been having a running conversation about how we ended up where we are, that things feel like they've changed over the last decade. And the question is, what changed? And I think what changed is the bottom half of the Big Ten and the Ivy League invested and improved. Is the Patriot League incapable of investing even a little bit? Like, you don't have to match Rutgers and Ohio State. But if a bottom tier Patriot League team like Holy Cross can go from 50th in RPI to 30th in RPI, that's going to help Army's metrics. I just don't know if the Patriot League is willing and able to match that.
I don't think it's a willing problem. I think it's an able problem. Like, if Holy Cross invested all that money in lacrosse, their roster would be turned over next year, and they'd be back down to 50th. So it becomes a question of, like, greater than academics at that point, right? Or excuse me, greater than athletics at that point. What's good for the academics? Is it worth it to spend all this money to build a roster to be the number 30 RPI in the country and miss the tournament? But I got to the Patriot League semifinal this year, but my roster is gone and they're all playing for Dartmouth and Brown now.
And I don't know if any of us have the answer to what needs to happen in that regard, because those are extremely high level discussions about the future of college athletics as a whole.
Right.
That's fair.
And a lot of that question was sort of, I don't want to say directed at Dan, but directed towards the no. I appreciate it. I mean,
it's directed towards the Army. He didn't have me on here.
it's directed to sort of the Army fandom of, like, okay, well, this is what's going on, right? Army has something to offer. Navy has something to offer. The rest of the Patriot League does not.
I would push back against that. I have a good friend whose kid was pretty highly recruited to Holy Cross, and I know what they pitched him. And I think that grad network is maybe a little stronger, at least in the Northeast, than you would realize living down south. I know what they would say, which is that they are a good school that they'll give you real scholarship plus some NIL. And if you go to an Ivy League school, that's also a good school, but it's, you know, people take shots at them all the time and you don't get a scholarship and you just get your NIL. And that works more often than you would think, but more often in football.
I think the proof is in the recruiting though. Like Army just flipped a 5-star defenseman from Duke, right? Loyola ain't doing that, right? Loyola is probably the only other team in the Patriot League besides Army and Navy that's consistently getting a 5-star recruit here and there. Lehigh once in a blue moon, you know, Colgate every once in a while, maybe, but Army and Navy are recruiting and performing at levels that are well above the Patriot League in lacrosse. And I just can't, I mean, Loyola has in previous years, right? They have a national championship to 2012 in a different conference, but it's a problem that I think that has to be solved on a service academy level. Air Force is different, right? Air Force doesn't really have they're competing in the schools that happen to be near them because there's not a lot of schools in the middle of nowhere. But Army and Navy, this is a problem they actually have to solve. And I sort of want to introduce that as a question going forward, because this sort of thing where Army is getting, you know, potentially left out of an NCAA tournament despite going 13-2, right? That won't be an uncommon thing.
If what you're saying is being outside the top three conferences means that it's like navigating a minefield or a maze within a minefield to get into the NCAA tournament, then yeah, by definition, it's going to be uncommon. You're going to really struggle to make those non-AQ years.
The difference is that those teams in those three conferences have so many more opportunities against top 20 teams than are available to Army.
Yep, right. That's true.
Was it 2019? Navy had what, 4 losses or something like that, yep, and got an at-large bid because teams didn't schedule the same way, right? It was a different world. So it's just something to keep in mind. The landscape has shifted significantly. It's a question worth investigating for sure. I think it's probably a good question to pose as we leave. But I hope at the very least that Army fans, you know, number one, understand, hey, this is where we actually sit this year. So don't be surprised that the number 3 team in the country is not getting a seed or something like that. Number two, attack this the right way. If you have a problem with something, attack it in a way that is productive, and don't go after people on X because they're trying to predict something that they have nothing to do with. And then
much more effective to pick it in person outside their house.
Right. and then number three, offer a better solution, right? If you have everyone can have a problem, but not everyone's got a better plan. So just sort of attack it smartly. That's about all I got. Mark, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you staying long.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. My parting thoughts here. Bottom line, if you guys win the AQ, I think you're a seed. It's going to be a low seed. CBS said on the air 3 or 4. I don't think that's realistic. Don't set those expectations. You're going to be disappointed. If you don't win the Patriot League, it's a bubble case. How compelling of a bubble case depends on factors outside of Army's control. Keep an eye on the RPI, but don't count on getting in. It's marginal. Absolutely. It's going to be fine margins either way.
All right.
I think that's it. Beat Navy.
Beat them.
Thanks for listening to this week's Ask for Football Army Football Show. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into Army football. Remember, whether you're cheering in the stands or following along from home, get all your updates on the Army football team at askforfootball.com. And as a special thanks, we would like to thank our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, Jocelyn Bradley is the expert you need. Visit jocelynbradley.com for all your real estate needs. Don't forget, subscribe, leave us a review, and follow us on social media for all the latest updates. Until next time, go Army, beat Navy!